From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Ellicott City near Baltimore in Maryland was hit with torrential rains and flash floods last week. It was the second time in 2 years that the small town was hit with a once-in-a-thousand-years flood. At least two people have died. There are also reports of five deaths and three missing persons from floods that swept through Virginia and North Carolina. The type of storms that were once considered extremely rare are now a commonplace part of the U.S.'s hurricane season. Well, it's been a year since Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the Paris Accord, which was the December 2015 international agreement reached at the United Nations' COP23 meeting in France during Obama's presidency. And Trump, who has a history of being a climate change denialist, rewarded the oil and gas industry with his decision to leave the accord. But local authorities, including states and cities and even organizations, rose to the occasion, saying that they would work to keep the U.S.'s commitment to the Paris Accord, even if the federal government didn't. California is organizing a major climate summit later this year, and activists with 350.org have called for a global day of action on September 8th. My guest is Thanu Yakupitiage, and she is the U.S. Communications Manager with 350.org. Welcome to the program, Thanu.
Thanks for having me.
So first, let's review what it was exactly that was the impact of this decision, this very dangerous decision by the Trump administration to pull out of the Paris Accord. What did that decision actually mean in practical terms? What happened, you know, to the ability of other nations who had signed on to move forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So when President Trump announced his intent to back out of the Paris climate deal, this basically set the stage for the U.S. to be the only country who was not in the historic agreement. And the implications are, if one of the largest producers of carbon emissions is not in the Paris Climate Agreement, what kind of stage does that set for other, Western countries, developed countries who are in the accord? And basically, since Donald Trump came into office, we've seen rollback after rollback in terms of climate policies, environmental policies. We've seen his cabinet gut the Environmental Protection Agency, undo countless protections for our air, water. He's tried to fast track the approval of both the Dakota Access and Keystone pipelines. And he's even announced that the desire to open up our entire coastline and national parks and indigenous lands to oil drilling. And so he really is in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry. He has hired people in his administration who have worked for the fossil fuel industry and have taken money from the fossil fuel industry. And he's basically creating incentives and tax cuts that uplift the fossil fuel industry over communities. And that's what the impact has been of his presidency on the climate and environmental movement.
Of course, global warming is called global warming because it is a global issue. Works if everybody sort of decides not to, everybody decides to reduce emissions. If the U.S. still continues to spew out emissions, it has a global impact. But still, have other countries been moving forward with their commitments to the Paris Accord?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we saw after Trump's announcement was that dozens of countries said that they were going to keep up their end of the bargain. And we see France said this, the United Kingdom said this, Germany said this, Japan, India, across the board. And so that is hopeful because climate change, as you say, is a global issue. 350.org, we are a global organization. And so that's why we're really using this moment in September where Governor Jerry Brown has invited not only local state and city leaders from all over the U.S., but also global leaders to really be part of thinking through what it means to actually push forward climate action. And what we're doing on our end is that we are putting together a global day of action, a global mobilization called Rise for Climate. In the U.S., it will be called Rise for Climate, Jobs, and Justice, to really push on our global and elected global and national elected leaders to really be upping the bar for climate action. We, like, 1 year after the Paris climate, Trump's announcement on the Paris climate deal, we no longer can just afford to have elected officials just say, well, you know, Trump isn't in, but we're resisting, and use a lot of words. What we need is tangible action. And for us at 350, what that means is three very clear things. It means actively transitioning, a just transition to 100% renewables. It means stopping new fossil fuel projects, and it means taking money out of the fossil fuel industry. These are the three things that we think make up the real bar of climate action and are the real solutions that we need elected officials in the United States and across the world to start putting into action.
Can states and local municipalities take enough action in, you know, local areas and the state level around the U.S. to compensate for the federal government's not just inaction on climate change, but exacerbation of climate change?
Absolutely. There's a lot that can be done on the local level, and we're already seeing it happen from cities such as Atlanta to Pittsburgh. We've seen mayors commit to transitioning their cities to 100% renewables by 2030, by 2050. And we're seeing, you know, cities like New York that have taken huge strides. They've divested their pension fund from fossil fuels. They're also suing the largest five fossil fuel companies for damages caused by climate change. These kind of local actions, they really create a blue wave of hope. And that's something that, regardless of whether the federal government is not acting, it really demonstrates the kind of leadership that people want. And this really means something ahead of the 2018 midterm elections, and will mean something moving into 2020 as well.
Now, the California summit that you mentioned, organized by California Governor Jerry Brown, certainly looks like an exciting sort of moment for people to join in at the state level. Tell us a little bit more about this summit and what exactly Jerry Brown's commitments are, because while he hails himself as a climate hero, he's been criticized by many in the state for promoting fracking or hydraulic fracturing of oil and gas.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Governor Jerry Brown is an example of someone who really stepped up, particularly after Trump made this announcement to say no, that, you know, California will push forward. And there's a lot of opposition to that in regards to, like, environmental justice and climate justice groups who have been working for decades in California to make sure that California really is meeting the momentum it's saying that it is. And so just recently, Brown's Last Chance, which is a coalition of over 800 groups in California, pushed out a letter to Governor Jerry Brown saying that in order for him to really be a climate leader, he needs to really step up and say no new fossil fuels, no more fracking, and he needs to stop allowing the fossil fuel industry to drill in California. There are some major weaknesses to Governor Brown, and as it's his last term, this is one of the reasons why California groups and groups across the country will be really pushing for the governor to put his money where his mouth is. If he really wants to be the climate leader that he says he is, he needs to really make some shifts in California before his term is over. And so while we welcome the Global Climate Action Summit and we welcome the strides that the governor has taken, our communities deserve more, and communities in California that live in areas where there is fracking happening, where there is polluted water and air because of the oil industry, the governor needs to be accountable to them. And so what we're asking for is way more than just the words.
Right. I mean, California is the world's fifth largest economy. So he's governing a state that is essentially as big as a country. Let's also talk about the September 8th Days of Action a little bit more. That's coming up in just a few months, right at the end of summer here. You said in the United States, it's a global day, but in the United States, why is it important to link the issue of jobs to actions on climate?
We understand that to work on climate change, you can't do that in a vacuum. In the work that we do, climate change is inherently linked to all sorts of issue areas. It's linked to environmental devastation. It's linked to the ways in which communities, particularly low-income communities and communities of color, have really felt the impacts of disastrous hurricanes and fires and whatnot in their communities. It's related to housing and people's right to live, to the air they breathe, to the water they drink. And it also is related to workers in the sense that when we call for a just transition to 100% renewables, we're doing that with workers in mind. We want to make sure that the transition that we know we need really prioritizes workers and their families so that we can all transition into an economy that works for us. And so that requires not leaving people behind. It requires ensuring that those who are already being impacted by climate change, that they have support in regards to it being able to ensure the futures of their families as well. And so that's why we really think that it's important to connect the issue of climate to workers, to issues of the economy, because nothing occurs in a vacuum, and climate change has really severe impacts at this moment. It's not something that's in the distant future. And so in a lot of the marches that we do, that's why it's really important for us to connect the dots, because we are working on an extremely intersectional issue.
And we see the effects of climate change every day on our program. Recently, we had covered what had happened in Puerto Rico last year with Hurricane Maria. And now news emerging that the death toll from that disaster was not 64, as was officially thought, was the official death toll, but closer to 4,645, possibly lower, higher than that even. And then we saw these devastating floods in Ellicott City in Maryland near Baltimore. These are supposed to be once in a thousand year floods. It's the second time it's happened in 2 years. We have to look at all of these through the lens of climate change, even if no single event can be directly linked in a cause and effect way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot at stake. And I think that our elected officials need to stop acting like these are isolated incidents. Like, how many billions of dollars is it going to cost to repair the damage in Houston and surrounding areas because of Harvey, from the Gulf that gets hit by these storms basically every year now, and Puerto Rico, whose death toll, as you said, is over 4,500 people? It's unacceptable that governments are just acting like these are once in a while occasions that don't actually severely impact people's lives. The New York Times reported this year that we should now expect that storms will be more severe than ever, that tides are rising, that temperatures will be hotter. There is tangible evidence. The science says that we are feeling the impacts of climate change, and we need to adapt fast. And that requires that we start implementing solutions, not false solutions, but real solutions. And that's what we're advocating for at 350.
Right. I mean, we are entering hurricane season right now. We're running out of time. It's 2018, and there's a 2020 deadline that needs to be met. Can you explain what this deadline is?
The deadline in 2020 is the deadline for when countries that have signed on to the Paris Climate Agreement, where they have to meet their goals in terms of reducing carbon emissions. 2020 is around the corner, and the United States has backed out of the agreement, or has announced its intent to back out of the agreement. And so there's a real question as to whether those goals can be met. If we do not reduce emissions, and if we do not, frankly, stop fossil fuel projects in the next 3 to 5 years, we are facing a huge crisis where we will not be able to mitigate the climate crisis. And this is something that obviously means a great deal for future generations. There's reports already saying that some of the reasons why people aren't having as many children as they used to is actually because they are worried about the impacts that climate change is going to have on future generations. And so this isn't something that we can continue to put to the back of our mind. Climate change is already impacting people's abilities to stay in their home countries. You're seeing migration because of climate change. You're seeing people continue to move inland because their coastal cities cannot sustain the impacts of climate change. And so this 2020 deadline was a serious deadline, and it's coming up.
And so finally, Thanu, the Rise for Climate mobilization on September 8th is still many months away. I'm assuming if people want, they can maybe organize their own events if they don't see one near them that they could join.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to riseforclimate.org and you can register an event in your town or city, not just in the US, but globally. And we encourage people to do so. We are really trying to use September 8th as a major moment to push on elected officials to take this seriously, to double down on real solutions and real commitments and start implementing a path towards a just transition to 100% renewables and make real commitments to stopping no new fossil fuels and to taking money out of the fossil fuel industry.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Thanu, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
My guest is Thanu Yaku Pitiyage. She is the U.S. Communications Manager with 350.org. We've been discussing what's happened in the year since Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris Accord and what's expected going forward. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find out more about our program at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.